Hello, my name is Malachi. I am an alcoholic. I'm going to adjust this so I'm comfy and don't whack my head on it because I might. Okay. Thank you for the step. I was at another meeting speaking and I rolled the podium practically right off the stage. I see there's a little stopper there too. I thank you for that. I don't want to injure the front row because I love you. There are two things that I remember doing before I took a drink. Breathing underwater and holding hands with girls. One of those things I would never do again because I'm not a mermaid. The other thing I would do for the rest of my life, it would shape how I drink, it would shape who I become, and it would shape why I stopped drinking initially, and it would shape who I am today. I was 5 years old the first time I took a drink. It was not by choice. I fell into a swimming pool and drowned. And I have a twin sister. She was also in the pool. And our father, who was a little bit errant, decided he should probably save me. My mother might be a little upset. And he pulled me from the bottom of the pool. And he gave me, after he resuscitated me, he gave me brandy. And a neighboring hotel member, a motel room guy, came over and gave him the brandy to give to me. And that was the first time I drank alcohol. I vaguely remember only via stories the warmth and the, you know, coming to and the being, oh, now I'm alive. I was dead or semi-dead. And that would shape my relationship with my father. That was probably the only and last nice thing he ever did for me. But I'm grateful for it because here I am. After that day, I don't recall drinking again until I was about 12 years old. My twin sister moved away to go live with our father, and who lived in Tennessee. He and my mother had got divorced. They were never in love, and I'll back up a minute. They met at a Zodi's. For those of you who are familiar with Zodi's, is like a Walmart. And they met at Zodi's. They had sex one time in the back of my father's car. My mom conceived my sister and I. We were born, and they moved us to Tennessee, and we lived there for 4 years. My mom didn't have a whole lot of help, any love, and she moved us back to California and became a single mom. And I didn't see my father except for summers, and even then it was pretty random that I would see him. He remarried when my sister and I were 5 to a woman who was 18. And she now had twin daughters and basically was in charge of keeping us for the summer, keeping us entertained. She did puppet shows and things that 18-year-olds do, you know, painted our toenails and hung out with us. We were girl pals. You know, she was married to my father for, I don't know, 11 or 12 years. And my sister decided to go live with them. So at 12 years old, my mother and I stayed in California, and my sister went to Tennessee to live with our father. And for the first time ever, I was separated from my twin sister, who from birth until then was my life. And I didn't know how to have friends. I didn't need to. I didn't know how to socialize with other people. And for the first time, I thought, well, I have to figure this out because I can't be a hermit. And so I started watching movies, and in those movies I learned how to make friends, and that was to drink. And so I thought, well, I'm 12. I can't really walk into the supermarket and get alcohol very easily. So I decided to babysit, and I started babysitting for all the neighbor kids, and when, you know, they would go to bed, I would raid their parents' liquor cabinets. And I was relatively deceitful. And I would steal the liquor. I never was one of those smart enough to fill it back up with water. You know, eventually, I'm sure they found out. No one ever said anything, but I didn't stick around long enough to hear anything. I still didn't have friends, though. I learned how to drink, but I never found anyone who really wanted to hang out. And by the time I was drinking daily, I was so into that I didn't want to leave my room. So for quite some time, that was kind of my pattern. My mom worked 3 jobs, so I never saw her. So I spent a lot of time alone. I did go to school. I actually worked in the school office so that if I cut class, no one would know. And it's a very, I thought in the moment it was pretty smart. I later got in trouble in high school for doing that. But initially in junior high, not so much trouble. They don't really care. They slap on the hand, got grounded. You know, I told my mom, they're making it up. They're confused. You know, she believed me because she believed everything. I was her angelic daughter. I went through high school. My sister came home at one point. She was gone for about 18 months, and she came home, and I thought, oh, yay, I can stop drinking. I don't need friends anymore. And this was the first time in my life I realized I couldn't stop drinking. This is the first time in my life that if I had the information I had today, I would say, I'm an alcoholic. But I didn't say that. I just said, you know, something's wrong with me, and I don't know what it is. I'll drink about it. So I did. I drank more. I drank heavily. My sister wasn't really interested in alcohol. She was interested in hallucinogenics, which I never was interested in. So she chased me around with a butcher knife one day on acid, and I told my mom she was crazy. She ran away from home, and then, you know, and my cycle started again. Now I'm without her again. And so I drank a lot heavier, and I went on to school, and, you know, that was my life. I woke up, I drank, I went to school, I came home, I drank, I went to bed, I woke up, I drank, I went to school. You know, my life was pretty boring. And I still didn't have a whole lot of friends. When I was a senior in high school, a junior and a senior, we had moved to Arizona. My mom got remarried for about a minute, and then we moved back. And then we moved back to California, and I went to Performing Arts High School here in San Diego. And my senior year, I drank my way through my classes, but, you know, it was social, it was fun, and it was the thing to do, apparently, because everyone else was getting through high school. And I thought, in my head, I thought, everybody does this. This is just what people do. We're teenagers. That's what we do. And I guess not everyone did that. I look today, I talk to people, my normie friends, and they're like, yeah, we didn't drink like that, really. Well, we drank. We saw you at the parties, I remember, you know, and I'm like, I don't remember even going to parties, but okay, I'll believe you because they probably have a lot more clarity than I did. My senior year in high school, I auditioned for a scholarship, and I got the scholarship. It was to Tisch School of the Arts, and that was my great escape. I was going to leave my boring life and my drinking, of course, because it was a California thing, and on the East Coast, they don't do that. And I was going to take my scholarship, and I was going to dance my way across New York and be on Broadway. And here I am. So that didn't pan out so well. I missed my second audition. I had won the scholarship and had a panel interview that I needed to show up for, and you know, was busy celebrating my scholarship, and didn't show up for the interview and lost my scholarship. 2 days later, I ran away from home. I moved to L.A., and I lived in L.A. for about 15 or 16 years before coming back to San Diego. During that time, between 12 and 17, I had become a daily drinker, as I said, and when I got to L.A., my neighbors thought I had a drinking problem, and that was my first introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous, which I didn't even know existed. I had seen the logo, the circle and the triangle, but I'm also gay. That's part of my story. I hope it doesn't make anyone uncomfortable. And if it does, just pray about it. It'll help. It helps me. It helped me a lot when I was growing up. But when I saw the circle and triangle a long time ago, I used to think that's the gay symbol. I didn't know. I mean, and it is, just for those of you who don't know, it is also the gay symbol. But I used to see it outside, and I used to think, oh, that's just a bunch of gays, just a bunch of gays everywhere. And that's true, too. We are everywhere, just so you know. But when I saw that symbol, I thought, I'm in the wrong room. I don't need to be here. You know, these people aren't gay. This is weird. They brought me to the wrong room. But my neighbors had taken me to this meeting, and it smelled like bleach, and everything was white, and everyone was white. I mean, there was no culture in this room at all. And I thought, I don't know. I'm in L.A. Like, where are my people? Where is everybody? And I couldn't hear anything anyone was saying because it sounded like this. Wah, wah. Everyone was just crying about their sad, boring, blah lives. You know, I lost my kids, I lost my house, I lost my job, I lost my car. I didn't have any of those things, so I didn't care. Really? And so what happened was I left that meeting and I came back every once in a while for coffee and donuts. But I was really stubborn. And over the next 8 years, I did not pick up a drink. And I didn't do drugs either. So I was sober in my world. And, you know, but the sad thing was, is that self-knowledge didn't keep me that way. I didn't have a sponsor. I didn't work the steps. Someone asked me once, do you have a big book? I said, yeah, I have several at home. I have a whole bookshelf full. I have a dictionary. I have, you know, they're like, no, a big book. Yeah, I have a big book. You know, it's that blue one they give you at the meeting. Yeah, have you read it? No, that was a different story. I didn't ever read the book. I didn't work with others, which they talk about a lot in these rooms. And I didn't like people. That's kind of what I determined, that every time I kind of walked in here, people wanted to hug me and they wanted my phone number. And I was like, get away from like this invisible barrier around me. And I had just been so used to being alone and to not having that affection for so long that I didn't want it, I thought. You know, I didn't want anyone to get close to me because the truth was, which I know now, is I didn't want them to see me. I didn't want them to know who I was. And the truth at that time is I didn't know who I was. I had no idea. And so I didn't go back into that room very often, but when I did, everyone tried to be nice to me, and I tried very nicely to tell them to get away from me, and but I didn't drink. And 8 years went by, and I was at a bar because I didn't change really a lot of my behavior. I shoot pool. I used to. I don't really so much anymore, but I used to shoot pool, and so I was in the bars pretty regularly in L.A., And there was a new bartender, and she was really cute. And she's like, do you want a drink? And I said, sure, okay. After 8 years of not drinking, like, I didn't need it. I realized my life went on, you know. I didn't need it to exist, which is what I thought before. And I took that drink, and I had 9 more that I remember that night. And I woke up outside of my house on the sidewalk the following morning, and people were pointing and laughing, and it didn't feel funny, but the first thought that crossed my mind is I need to do drugs. Like, I can't hold my liquor. And 2 days later, and I know this is Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm going to mix it up. 2 days later, I was doing cocaine. 2 days after that, I was doing crystal meth. And 2 days after that, I was doing heroin and pills. And so six days after I took my first drink after 8 years, it took 6 days to get to a place I never thought I would go, ever. And I was there in 6 days, less than a week. And for 2 years, that was my life. For 2 years, I did a combination of those things every single day and maintained my job. I missed one day of work. This is the part I like to tell people. I'm a school director. I work in special education. I've been in special education for 19 years. Not in it, like going to special education. I know it may appear that way. But I am a school director. And, you know, I'm very fortunate that I didn't lose my job. I'm very fortunate that I didn't kill someone, because for those 2 years, I drove 112 miles a day on the 405 freeway in Los Angeles, where there are millions of people. Did you guys know that? There are so many people in Los Angeles. But I didn't hurt anybody. Thank God. I didn't hurt myself, and I didn't hurt any of you, because here you are. But, you know, what I learned during that time was I wasn't having any fun. It was never fun for me. It wasn't the big party it was when I was 12 years old. It wasn't the big top secret adventure when I was 15. It wasn't any of that anymore. It was my life. And it was really, really sad. I went downhill pretty quick. By the time I came back into these rooms, I weighed 85 pounds, like now. kidding.
I'm totally kidding.
When I came back in these rooms, I was very, very isolated. I didn't see people ever except for at work. And when I was at work, I was locking myself in my office because I felt like a hypocrite. I felt like I was around these teenagers. And before I moved to San Diego, the kids I was working with were gang kids, kids who had been convicted of little miniature drug crimes. Maybe they were in day programs or mental health programs, but they weren't. The kids I work with now are very different. But those kids, they could function and have a conversation with me. And I was telling them, yeah, you really shouldn't do drugs. Excuse me. It's a hard day to do that and then look in the mirror. So my solution to that was covering my mirrors. And I'm being totally serious. I didn't try to change who I was. I tried to change everybody else and everything around me to suit me. It doesn't work. I'll just save you the effort. Like a good Al-Anon would. But thank God it only lasted 2 years is the best thing I could say about that 2 years. Because I don't know that I would be here. If my best girlfriend came to me a year after she had gotten sober, and so we're now at August 1998, 2 years and 1 month into my nightmarish downward spiral, and she knocked on my door, and she's like, I've called you 5 times. What's going on? You're not answering. And I said, well, you know, I'm busy doing nothing. And she said, I want you to come and give me my year cake in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was like, ugh, that place? And I came in. I met her at that meeting, and I gave her her year cake. But I walked into this room, and it was 200 people easy. And I knew her better than everyone, and I didn't know her at all. She was bright and shiny and happy, and everybody knew exactly who she was except me. And I'd known her forever. And that made me really sad and really envious. And I was having all these internal feelings, and they were fighting with each other. And I didn't know what to do, so I just kept looking for a way out of the room. And finally, I said, I have to go. I left the meeting. I got in my car, and I drove back to L.A. from Long Beach. And I was saying the Serenity Prayer the whole way home. I didn't even know I knew the Serenity Prayer. But it was stuck in my head, and I couldn't stop. It was like just one of those thoughts, like I was perseverating on the Serenity Prayer. It was very weird. And I got home, and my partner at the time, who I had been with for 4 years, who had been an active drinker and drug user before I relapsed, and I had kind of kept her that way, and I didn't realize any of this until much later, that I had enabled her. We had roles in our relationship, as so many people do, and I had kept her there because she served a purpose for me. She made me feel useful. And I kept her sick by giving her what she needed to feel loved and needed and safe. And so we kept this cyclical cycle thing going and going and going. And I thought when I drank, oh, God, our relationship's going to change. What's my role now? And really, she was just like, woohoo, party's on. I thought, oh, good, we're going to get closer. And really, over that 2 years when I was spiraling, we were drifting further and further apart. My apartment was very, very small, and we couldn't get to more opposite corners. It was really quite sad. But that whole drive home, I kept thinking, I have to get sober. I can't do this anymore. I'm at that place where I feel like if I take one more thing, if I ingest one more drink or one more drug, I'm going to die. And what I knew is I didn't want to die. None of this was ever about dying, ever. And I walked in the door, and I said, I need to get sober, and if you don't want to get sober, see you later. And she walked out the door, and I was like, what? Wait, come back. Just kidding. And I thought my life was over, and it wasn't. you know, it took me 3 more months to come back into these rooms. I did go to the meeting, that Friday night meeting that my friend asked me to give her cake for the next 3 months. Every Friday I drove there. Sometimes I was drunk. Sometimes I was high. Sometimes I just got there by the skin of my teeth and I stood outside the door going, I'm just going to go in. No, I'm not. Yes, I am. No, I'm not. Yes, no. Just listen from the doorway. Okay. And sometimes I went in and I sat there through the whole meeting. And I kept hearing things in there that sounded like my life. And I kept thinking all the while, these people don't look anything like those people in that first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting I went to so many years ago. Today they look a little bit more like me. And they sound a little bit more like me. It was all very interesting. And so I felt a little more connected. And I felt like maybe there is something here. But then I would go home and I couldn't get it together because osmosis wasn't working either. And so while I was in L.A. and everyone else was in Long Beach staying sober, I was in L.A. going, why isn't this working? I'm not sure. And unfortunately, I decided that I couldn't do it on my own and I didn't know what to do. I just got to that kind of split second thought of, well, I'm just going to end it. It's just over. I'm done. I'm done trying. I give up. I brandished my white flag. I'm done. And I took all of the drugs and alcohol that I had in my house. I injected my migraine medication. And I decided that now it's in God's hands. Funny, in God's hands. God, who I had never really thought much about except for hatred. When I was a small child, God took away the people I loved. And so I thought, God doesn't have anything for me. And so it was ironic to me in those moments that I was talking to God. And I remember very vividly on that night feeling this warmth come over me and thinking very rationally, that's God. It was just such a weird blip in time. And that was one of the last things I remember. I was very inebriated. I passed out. And then the next thing I remember was this warm, fuzzy glow coming over me. And I was like, oh, I'm in heaven. And I wasn't. Because I could see the observatory out my window. It was my Silver Lake view. And I thought, I'm not in heaven. And I need to get sober. And I need to go back to Alcoholics Anonymous because it's the only thing that's going to help me. And I wobbled to the meeting around the corner that I had found in those during those 3 months. And it's the AT Center in L.A. And I went to a meeting. And then that night, I went to that Friday night meeting. And for the first time in those 3 months, I identified as an alcoholic. And I thought the room was going to, like, explode with, I knew it. I told you so. We're saving a seat for you, you know. And that was my 27th birthday. And I'm so grateful. I've had 11 more birthdays in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I love this program. I mean, this program gave me a life. It gave me my life back. And it gave me a life worth living. It continues to give me a life worth living. But I have to do the work. And that was something I didn't know. I found a sponsor in Long Beach. I moved to Long Beach from L.A. because I figured it's probably not really good. I was living in my drug dealer's apartment. By this time, he had moved. I had moved into his apartment, changed the locks. And I thought, probably not a good way to start off my recovery. So I moved to Long Beach, to my new sober community. And I loved Long Beach. It's so beautiful there, and the people are beautiful, and everyone was nice and spiritual, and I was going to find a girlfriend in Alcoholics Anonymous because everybody's so healthy there. So I went to a lot of meetings. I sure did. And I found a lot of girlfriends, but they all had girlfriends. And so began my first triangle. Today I work a different triangle, don't worry. But initially I didn't. Initially, in recovery, I caused a lot of damage. I broke up relationships, which today I know that it's not all me. Today I know I only have a part and everybody has a part. But if I waited around for everyone to see their part, good God, I would be old and gray. But the good news is I see my part and I've been able to make amends, so that's good. Good for me. I had a lot of relationships that were not above board. I guess that's the easiest way to say it. And a lot of love. I have had a lot of love in these rooms. But it hasn't always been, you know, very appropriate. The good news is that I have the steps. And the bad news is that it took me a really long time to get to a place where I saw that my behavior was driving my disease. I felt like as long as I was going to meetings and as long as I was working the steps to the best of my ability in my mind, that I was okay and that I'm just not drinking. I'm fine. I'm fine. I would walk around. I'm fine, crabby as anything. You know, don't talk to me. Don't touch me. I'm fine. You know, why don't you want to work with me? You know? And the truth was, is I would look at the steps and I would be, you know, the girl who was like, yeah, I'm powerless over alcohol. Yes, my life is unmanageable. Hello. Or, you know, yeah, I came to believe in this power that's greater than me. What's so great about it? You know, like behind closed doors, I'd be like, whatever, God, schmod. Because I was in charge. I was the boss of me my whole life. I wasn't about to let anybody be the boss of me just because I wasn't drinking. Again, I didn't see that until much later. But in the moment, I thought, I got this. I mean, how many people have said that? I hear it all the time. I got this. I got this. I got this. I didn't have it. I didn't have it at all. And I am lucky that I did not drink. I am so lucky. I pray about it every day. I'm so thankful. But what happened was I did work the steps for four times in 6 years. And after that first round of steps, I got a sponsee because my sponsor told me, you need to work with another alcoholic. And I thought, no, I don't. Yes, you do. No, I don't. Yes, you do. Okay, I will if someone approaches me. Someone approached me. She happened to have been a good friend of mine. And she said, I need to find a sponsor. And I said, ooh, let's find one for you. Okay, I'm excited. And she goes, no, you. And so we started working together and we worked the steps. And we worked together for 2 years. And really, my life changed. I was shocked. I started to believe in the steps. I started to believe that this stuff really works. I started to believe there's a reason I'm not drinking. And there must be a God because someone is sticking with me for more than like 10 minutes. And so I thought this stuff really works. And we went to tons of meetings and I even along the way picked up another sponsee. And then in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, my sponsee heard someone share their opinion. And they shared that opinion like it was fact. And they said the following. If you're on medication, you're not sober. And I wasn't at that meeting because I have migraines, chronic migraines, and I was home in bed with my phone off, and she had called me. She left that meeting, and she called me. And she left this message. This man just shared that if I'm on medication, I'm not sober. Well, if I'm not sober, I'm not sober. And she went and she drank and she died. And I say that not so that people feel sorry for me, because it did devastate me. It rocked my world. It turned my sobriety upside down. I say that because when we speak from these podiums, people listen. We have a job to do. We are carrying a message. The message is in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It does not come from my head. It does not come from a cereal box. It does not come from my ass. Excuse my language. When I carry a message, I have to know that someone might take that message somewhere else. And so I need to know that that message is something that is truthful and honest. And if it is my opinion, I need to say, this is my opinion. And it's okay to share an opinion from a podium, for God's sake. But please, please, for the sake of people who listen, remind people that it's an opinion. Because there are blank spaces between the words in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And they're blank for a reason. we can put notes in there and we can do things in there. But when we start putting our own ideas in there, it becomes very dangerous. There are 12 steps for a reason. It's been 100 years, however many years. I'm not very good at math. I know it hasn't been that long. But it's been a long time since the steps were written, and they have not added steps. So I say all of that to say, it turned my sobriety upside down. I stopped working with others. I stopped working the steps. I stopped going to meetings. I isolated. I shut down. I almost drank. Simultaneously, I got recruited to move to San Diego and open a school. And so I moved away, and I thought, this is good. I can get away from everything that reminds me of my wonderful, wonderful friend and sponsee. And I moved here, and I thought, I'm dying. I'm dying in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous because I'm not going to meetings and I'm not working with others. I'm dying. And I started trying to go to meetings in San Diego. And I started reaching out. In my mind, I was reaching out because I was, you know, sitting in the back and not saying anything, but just showing up again, standing at the doorway. I'm going to go in. No, I'm not. Yes, I am. No, I'm not. And so the cycle was beginning again for me. But what I did know is I didn't want to drink. And so I walked into several meetings, and I wasn't finding solution. I wasn't finding what I needed to hear. I wasn't hearing something that resonated with me. I'm not saying that people weren't healing and people weren't, you know, thriving in Alcoholics Anonymous. I wasn't. And then all this time was passing, and all of a sudden I had 8 years, and I was at that place where almost to the day of my relapse, I was at 8 years and a couple months, and I thought, oh, God, this timeline is just killing me. I'm going to drink. I am going to drink. I do not want to, and I am not going to have a choice. I am not going to be able to stop myself because I don't have the tools. I couldn't remember the tools. I couldn't remember what the third step was. And I went to a meeting, and someone said, we don't talk about alcohol here. And I said a profanity word. And then someone told me where to go to a meeting. And I walked into that meeting that they directed me to go to, and I ran into my lovely sponsor. God took me to that room because we got sober in Long Beach together. And I hadn't seen her in years. And she was not my sponsor in Long Beach. I had disconnected from my sponsor when I moved. But when I walked into that room, I was going to drink. And I walked in, and I was crying. I was a mess. And, you know, they pick on the criers, and they pointed me out when the lights came on. They were meditating when I walked in. And I was like, what the hell is going on here? What have I got myself into? And the lights came on, and I'm crying, and they pointed me out. You're going to share you there with the crazy hair. And I started talking, and my sponsor turned around, and, you know, what are you doing here? Oh, my God, I haven't seen you, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, she started taking me through the work. I said, please, I'm dying. Take me through the steps. She took me through the steps. For the first time, I understood the big book. For the first time, we read the book together. We answered questions. We talked about the book. We talked about how this is a disease. And the most important thing that I got when I worked the steps was that this is a spiritual malady. Did you know that? I didn't know that. I kept saying to my sponsor, this was not in the book when I read it before. That was not there. I pulled out my old big books. I was flipping through them like, oh, she's right. I was so upset, but grateful. But I worked the steps like I have never worked the steps before. And at 8 years sober, I wrote a sex inventory. Who knew you had to write one of those? I mean, who knew that all of the lives, I was literally the tornado they talk about in the book. And who knew that had I written a sex inventory all those years ago, I might not have had to do all that. Perhaps. It was fun, but it was chaotic. And I harmed a lot of people. And I had a lot of amends to make because of it. In recovery, I did that damage. And it is very humiliating to sit across from someone. Yes, it's healing and spiritual and freeing. Amends are wonderful. But it is humiliating to sit across from someone and not have drinking as an excuse. So that was my entire amends list. Everything was in recovery that I did because I was a solo drinker. I was an isolator. So I worked these steps and I did all this work and I made this whole huge list of amends and I started praying and meditating, and I call it preditating because I don't really like to meditate, so I pray and meditate at the same time. And I couldn't sit still, so I wrote a little mantra. I wrote a word for every letter of the alphabet, and then I would just read it and sit there until I memorized it. Now I can sit actually for about 20 minutes. Pretty proud of myself. But today my head doesn't go in 100 different directions. Today I can sit, and today, if you would have told me even a year, I would say even a year ago, that I would ask God in the morning what I should do, if you would tell me that God would direct my every thought and action, I would tell you you were wackadoo. Because I was not a God lover, like I said before. I was a God hater. I was not atheist or agnostic. I don't know what the word would be. You can make one up. Feel free. But today, I ask God every morning, direct my thinking. Where will you have me be? What will you have me do? Please don't let me kill the children. That's the prayer I say the most, seriously. But, you know, today I have so many gifts in my life because of Alcoholics Anonymous. But it's because I do the work. If I sat back, and they say rest on my laurels, this is now my laurels. If I sat back on my laurels and did nothing, I would get nothing. Nothing begets nothing. I learned that in Alcoholics Anonymous. Half measures avail nothing. Nothing. Why do I want nothing? I want something. I didn't make it through all of that hell to get nothing. You know, I want a life worth living today, and I have it because of this work. I have it because I work with others. So after Lindsay died and I didn't work with anybody, I was terrified to come here, and I knew going in when I worked the steps again, I knew that end was coming, that step 12, and I was going to have to work with others. And today I have the great pleasure of working with 10 people, and I don't care how busy my life is. I love it. I go to work every single day except for the weekend, thank God. But every weekday, you know, I'm at Monday through Friday job, and I come home and I'm either in a meeting or I am in my house with another alcoholic because I have to be. If I do not do this work, I will die. If I do not carry this message, I will drink. And for me to drink is to die. Today, when I hold the hands of girls, it is not with ulterior motives, and she would be with me, not with someone else, and with me. Because today, I don't have to do that. Today, I have self-respect. Today, I have respect for you. Today, I have respect for God and the power of this program. When I was 1 year sober, I bought myself a token that said, like a little symbol for Alcoholics Anonymous, and I went into a bank, and the guy behind the counter said, "What's that for?" And, you know, they had the glass. And I said, "It's Alcoholics Anonymous." And he's like, "What?" And I said, "Alcoholics Anonymous." And he said, "What?" I said, "Alcoholics Anonymous! Anonymous! Through the bank." And everybody turned and looked. And I was all, "That's right!" I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I am grateful to be a recovering member of this program. Thank you so much.